The end of Deuteronomy, the end of Moses' reign, the end of it all. When I think about it today, look at Moses. Look at who God had called him to be from the very beginning, now to the very end. Moses had a beautiful view. Wow, what a great view it was. Have you ever said those words when you looked out at something and said, wow, how beautiful? I know lately, if you've been up early enough or in the afternoon late enough, the Lord's been doing some mighty beautiful handiwork, hasn't He? It's gorgeous, the morning sunrises and the things and the evening sunsets. There's lots of things in this world that we have around us. You know, I wonder if Moses said to them when he climbed Mount Pisgah and he looked out at the Promised Land, could you imagine him saying, wow, what a view? Many of us in this world today have taken and seen beautiful images, scenery from on high. I remember years ago flying in an airplane and the pilot told us to look out the window at the beauty of Greenland. And it's amazing what it looks like from the sky. He was low enough to say, just look. And how it all was so beautiful and almost like a patchwork. It was just gorgeous. I've stood on the Mount of Olives and I've looked out at Jerusalem. I've been able to take a boat ride on the Jordan River. I've had the privilege and honor to ride a train from Waterloo Station in England to the Stratford-upon-Avon and take a boat ride on the Thames River. I've stood on the beaches of eastern North Carolina and South Carolina. I've looked out at the beauty of the ocean. I've walked out and looked over the deck at the sun rising over the mountains. I've seen the sun rise over the Sea of Galilee. And you stand in those places and you say, wow. Wow, what a view. You can look out your window and say, wow, what a view. Still, I wonder if Moses was filled with awe by what he saw. Did Moses see the green and the fertile land around the flowing River Jordan? Did he see the Dead Sea and the hills that surrounded it? Did he see the towns and villages of the people the children of Israel were about to displace? Did he see those places that were there? Were there roads and pathways connecting one village to another? Did he see the smoke from distant fires? Besides wondering what Moses saw when he climbed that mountain, what was he feeling? What was he thinking? The Scriptures do not let us in on Moses' feelings and his emotions. But I wonder if Moses felt sad and disappointed when he climbed Mount Pisgah and he looked out over the Promised Land. He had been through so very much with these people. He was wandering around in the wilderness for 40 years, listening to their complaining, their bickering, defending them before God. And Moses had seen the mighty hand of God work miracles in their midst. He had experienced God's anger when they were disobedient and went astray. Now, having come all this way, Moses would not be allowed to enter the Promised Land, only view it from high atop Mount Pisgah. You see, Moses, in the midst of everything over those years, Moses had done wrong, and Moses had disobeyed God, and Moses was punished. And God kept His promise. That's the way it happens in the world. Sometimes we beg and we want God not to keep His promises. We want our parents not to keep their promises, especially when it comes to punishment. We hope and pray that they will forget. But I don't know about you all, but my folks never forgot. They knew. Sometimes it wasn't pretty, sometimes it wasn't easy, but they, when you were promised something, if it was a punishment, a spanking, a discipline, it came true. And that's exactly what happened here between God and Moses. Moses had took matters into his own hands and did something one more time, and God had asked him not to, and he did it. And from that, even after 40 years of devout service, just one time, God says, nope. Moses, you get to come right here. You get to climb up this mountain and you get to look out at everything. And over there is the land flowing with milk and honey. Over there is the promised land that these folks will enter. But Moses is going to die in that place and he's going to be buried in Moab. And of course, the place where he is buried is not known because people would raid it as they do a lot of folks' places. Doesn't it seem a little unfair to you that Moses had not asked for this job? And he actually did all in his power to say no to God and to go to Egypt and bring God's people out. He said, you know, God, I really don't want to do this. How many times did Moses tell God, I really don't want to do this, God? You know, I can't speak well. I can't do this, God. I can't do that. Well, every time he said that, God did what? He put somebody in his place to help him, to help lead him, to walk beside him, to be there for him. So God took care of everything that Moses said, I can't do. God says, I got you. Yeah. Pay attention, I got you. Yet we see God's tender mercies in the fact that God was on the mountain with Moses when he viewed the promised land and when he died in Moab. God was there with him. We are told that God buried him in a place that no one's ever known, and we find that in 34:7. He allowed Moses to live 120 years, it says, and his sight was unimpaired and his vigor was not abated. Well, I've not lived 120 years, and sometimes I feel like I'm 120, I think. But I don't know that God has been good to Moses. God's been good to me. God's been good to you. But God has been good to Moses. He's allowed him to be there and have the stamina to continue to be there, to live, and to see all this. Moses' life has been amazingly led by the hand of God. His mother making sure that his big sister Miriam put him in the river to save him. How the Egyptian princess found him and raised him in the palace with his own birth mother as his nanny. Jochebed was his mother. She gave birth to him and she asked Miriam to take him and put him in the bulrushes in the water to save him because the king wanted all the male kids killed. The babies. She saved him. She was his nanny. His own mother was his nursemaid. She, as they call it, a wet nurse at that time, she fed him and took care of him. Living a good life, but becoming aware of his heritage and trying to deal with it. Being called by God from a burning bush, that would have scared the bejeebies out of most of us. God called him out. Seeing the face of God. Moses was picked by God to lead God's people. And he was an unwilling servant for many, many years. He ran from God. He ran away and lived his life. And it took a lot of people to turn him around. He ran away and yet God still pursued him. And in his old age, he led the people out of Egypt and into the wilderness and on to the promised land. Moses wasn't a youngster when this happened. He was 80 years old when God finally got a hold of him. Because every time something happened, Moses made an excuse and he ran. But here, finally, he says, Moses here. Moses had trials and tribulations all the way. Over those 40 long years. Now, 40 years is a long time. Yet Moses still obeyed God and the Israelites still complained. Imagine that. People are serving God and doing and somebody's complaining. Have you ever been anything whenever you're trying to lead people and somebody complains? Can you imagine that happening? Shocking, isn't it? Happens all the time. And sometimes you want to just get up and leave. It's like, have at it. But Moses was like, wow, why are you still complaining? Moses' death was not as entertaining as his life was. But God was there, and it made all the difference. God buried Moses in a place unknown, it says, to man, so that his burial place would not be desecrated, so that someone would not come and try to dig him up, so that someone would not come and try to do something ridiculous. I think about Moses. I wonder if Moses was angry as he looked over the beauty of the land. We know that there was definitely an angry streak in his personality. He had, after all, committed murder. You know, we always like to think that all the people in the Bible are so amazing and wonderful and fantastic. But you know, Moses was a murderer. A lot of people like to say he was a basket case. He was in a basket to begin with. He was a murderer. Perhaps as Moses looked out over the land, he was angry with the children of Israel for their lack of faith and disobedience. He could have been. You know, he could have been angry with them. He could have been upset with them. When the spies returned from visiting the promised land, why didn't they listen to the good report of Caleb and Joshua? See, Caleb and Joshua were the ones that were sent, but the spies went out. These two men encouraged the people to have faith in the power of God to conquer the people of this land. But the people listened to who? The 10 spies, who feared that they could not penetrate that well-fortified cities or defeat the giants that they saw amongst them. So guess what? Something's going to happen. You see, the children of Israel rebelled against God, and they were punished. They were made to roam in the wilderness for 40 years. Not 4 days, 4 months, 4 years, 40 years. 1 year for each day that the spies spent in the promised land. That's where it comes from, because they were not listening. If only had they had been faithful, they could have been enjoying the fruits of the land by now. Perhaps Moses was also angry with God for not allowing him to enter the promised land. Hadn't he done all that God had asked him? Hadn't he been patient and loving to the people who wanted to replace him and who questioned his authority at every move he made? See, the people were not happy. They were angry. They were frustrated. Even though God was providing for them daily manna from heaven, He told them what to do with it, how to take care of it, how that every day it would be provided, and not to store any up. But guess what they did? They stored it up, and guess what happened to it? It rotted. He said, you don't have faith. Where's your faith? You got to listen. Everything that God provided for these people, they're just like you and me. They don't listen. They question authority and they question every move that people in authority make. Well, what in the world did he do that for? What in the world is she thinking? Have you ever heard things like that? Have you ever said anything like that? I don't know who in the world she thinks she is. Wonder what he's up to. Have you ever, you know, people are always wondering what everybody else is doing. And sometimes you always, I can hear the back of my mind, people in from my past, like my parents and my grandparents, saying, tend to your own business. But sometimes folks say, I wonder what they're up to. Folks are nosy, aren't they? They're a little inquisitive, they like to say. Just a little inquisitive. We care about you. No, you're nosy. You just want to know what's going on. That's all you want to know. And that's exactly what's going on here. People questioned everything that Moses was doing. They questioned everything that he was doing. He kept telling them it's from God. So they were questioning everything God had in store for them. Then again, maybe Moses felt a sense of relief. Maybe he thought, phew, it's been a long 40 years, folks, wandering around in this desert. It's hot, it's sandy, it's dirty, it's nasty, there's not enough water. The children of Israel were a difficult bunch of people. They were a difficult bunch. They were not easy to deal with. They had their mind set up, and they had done it this way for so long. They weren't about to change. Have you ever run into that? Imagine. I've heard that before when I've come to churches. I can't imagine somebody saying, well, now we've done it this way forever and I don't know why we need to change it. And I'm like, well, you know, sometimes it might actually be okay if we change a few things every now and then. Some of y'all might have even said that. Can you imagine anybody saying that? That group of Israelites were a stiff-necked people. Perhaps Moses was looking forward to a prolonged fight to conquer the people of the Promised Land. I seriously doubt that. But he could have. He could imagine how they would complain when they lost the battle or when things weren't going their way. Have you ever seen people lose something and then complain because it didn't go their way? Have you ever been to a ball game? Have you ever been to a children's ball game and watched adults go bananas? Kids are on the field. I don't care where they're at. They all go to the ball. And they're like, they're learning, but it's funny, but the parents just go off the chain, don't they? Some are just crazy. But anyway, that's another thing too. But sometimes we just get so upset about things. You know, Moses had a lot going on for him. Maybe Moses was happy to have somebody younger coming up to the plate. Someone younger that had been appointed, that had been anointed, that God had told him to lay his hands on. Joshua was there to lead that group of Israelites into battle. It was Joshua who was to be the next leader that God had promised them. And Moses was probably relieved. He was probably like, wow, even though I've lived a good life, I'm tired. He says, I'm tired. You know, these people have got on my last nerve. He's tired because they haven't listened. As I thought about Moses and the Promised Land, I recognized that we have our own Promised Land that we're trying to enter. We all have goals. We all have dreams that we pursue. Perhaps our goals might be academic, to attain a certain degree or achieve some kind of academic status in our lives. I've already been there and done that. That's over. Maybe our goals are to have a great marriage, a wonderful family. Perhaps our goal is to be healthy or to get in great shape or attain the perfect weight. I'm not there yet. Maybe our dream is that perfect job or that perfect house. You see, like Moses, we might find ourselves seeing these dreams and goals from far away. But we may not be able to attain them. We may see somebody else attain them. And you know, sometimes that's okay. There are times when we have to give up our dreams. Sometimes we have to change our goals. There are times when we have to review our life. We have to take a look at who we are and what we are doing. We have to reassess our goals and ask God to help us. Because, you know, if God was not in on it to begin with, it's not going to do us a whole lot of good. In other words, we need to let God in on our plans. Have you told God what you got planned for your life yet? Have you let Him help you a little bit? We need to pray about where we are headed as individuals and also where we are headed as a church. Not only a church, but the church. The church of Jesus Christ. The church that is looking to go forward. And right now, we are in the United Methodist Church. And what does it look like? You know, it's up in the air. It's been in the air for 2 or 3 years, and it looks like it's going to be a couple of more. Because we don't know. But the thing we do know is that we are children of God. And we are His children, and we are those people that are serving and doing. You know, we need to ask ourselves some questions. How does this make us feel? Do we become sad and disappointed when we think about the Promised Land? What is our Promised Land? Do we get angry with God, ourselves, or others? Are we relieved that we don't have to carry that burden or achievement anymore? Wherever you may be and whatever you may be facing, know this, and don't ever forget that God is with you and God is with me, just as God was with Moses. Let us pray.